This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for being with us on a beautiful fall, autumn-like Monday afternoon here in St. Louis. We are grateful that you're hanging out with us. A reminder, you can stream us on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, anywhere you go, crystal clear connection. Go download and find 97.1 FM Talk and the Annie Fry Show. Every day that we are watching Donald Trump continue to assemble his cabinet, his appointees, a huge, huge congratulation to Will Scharf on his appointment to be the secretary. I should have had it written down. He's like the office. He's head of the office. He told me specifically that he will see all the documents that go into the president and come out from the president's office.
Yeah.
He oversees all of that. And he said that during George W. Bush's presidency, do you know who had that position? Brett Kavanaugh.
That's right. Yeah. I saw that this weekend.
Yeah. So it's really exciting for Will Scharf.
White House staff secretary.
Staff secretary.
It's that staff word I can never remember.
Yeah. Either. It's incredible for him. Well-deserved. I remember when he was running for attorney general, he would kind of tell us, like, the president would be like, you don't want to be attorney general of Missouri. You want to come work with me after I win. And he's like, I would really like to be the attorney general. And it didn't work out, but it worked out. And we're very happy for Will Scharf. We'll be having him on the show again in due time to talk about everything that is taking place there. But watching these cabinet appointments come in, these staff, the advisor appointments, it's really exciting to see. Some of them are making me a little more anxious than others. And it's truth be told, and the Matt Gaetz one is the one that I'm just like still a little bug-eyed about. I'm not going to be sad if Matt Gaetz becomes the Attorney General of the United States. I think we need to make that clear. I'm going to be shocked.
You know why?
Which is different.
You won't be sad, though, because he's going to go through a rigorous process. And if he comes out of that and is still the Attorney General, you will say, okay.
And when you have a 53-seat majority in the Senate, you have the ability for some people to stand on their own principles or whatever it is that's pressuring them to vote no and still potentially get passed. You can lose three senators, 3-2-1. I guess you could lose, if you lose three, then it's 50-50 or 50 whatever. And J.D. Vance gets to be the tie vote there. Ryan Schmelz is going to be with us in 15 minutes or so. He's Fox News Radio's Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. He's going to give us the latest on what's going on there on Capitol Hill with these appointments, how we're going to talk about recess appointments with him as well, which is something we've discussed. We talked about it with Hans von Spakovsky, but I think it's something that we need to continue to talk about just in practicality. We're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, too. I think probably in the 2 o'clock hour. Brian Stelter, he got fired from CNN and then somehow he crawled back in and they're like, okay, okay.
Yeah.
He wrote an article for Reliable Sources and he was talking about like what the media can learn from this election. And he was making suggestions. I think he still teaches possibly at one of those Ivy League schools. He was talking about adjustments that need to be made going forward with the media, because a lot of the media are gobsmacked about what took place. They can't believe it. And the reason they can't believe it is because they have been existing in an alternate reality than you and I have. They're not people who ever actually pay attention to the price tag on butter when they put it in their cart. They probably aren't ever the one putting the butter in their cart. They don't understand what it's like to deal with the economy the way it's been kicking our butts. They are plugged in enough to the system that they benefit from it more than they're hurt by it. And you and I don't have the ability to experience that. Well, one of the things that Brian Stelter said, which I actually thought that's something that we try to do here on the show, and I thought this is actually a good suggestion. But he was talking about when the media goes on and has experts on and is talking about, for example, tariffs and talking about why tariffs are good things and why tariffs would be bad things or whatever. He said the media needs to begin to first ask the question, what is a tariff? Which seems silly to some, but I really don't believe that most of the people who are running the show in the major media outlets understand. I'm 40 years old. We're all in our 40s. We were babies when Reagan was the president. So if you want to talk about the Cold War, we studied it. We do not know it or understand it from real world experience. And even to say that out loud is kind of, it feels like it diminishes me in like my ability to speak about things, because even at 40, I still feel kind of young in this industry. But there is so much incestuous type of discussion that comes out of news and media, commentators, experts, fellows, like all of these types of things, where you have to be really into the club to even understand the conversations that are taking place. And if that's the case, then it really makes more sense to me that younger people, and you know, we can determine what younger people is, that younger people would be easily duped by what Donald Trump will do and what he won't do, when the people who are doing the speaking on how terrible and scary Donald Trump is aren't actually explaining things in ways that people understand. They're just taking everything for granted. That most people, you could go out and ask 100 people downtown St. Louis right now what a tariff is. Maybe 25% would be able to tell you what it is. Like, actually?
Maybe. Yeah, and there was a lot of consternation about that before the election from think tanks. You know, there were a lot of people trying to get people scared of tariffs before the election, because it was they were looking for anything they could find on the economy. And they're like, well, let's go with that. Trump talks about that.
And they pick it because less people know what it means.
Yeah. And we can explain this to you. We can explain this really well. And so it kind of percolates in liberal circles and these kind of academic worlds that nobody...
Even Donald Trump would say, when he was asked about it, that tariffs can be a very bad thing. That's why you use them in negotiation. You're not using... The tariff isn't the end of the policy. The tariff is the beginning of the policy. The tariff is the avenue that... We're doing the same thing. Like, we're talking about tariffs right now without, like, an actual definition of them. Stephen Moore will be on with us at 1 o'clock, and we will ask him specifically. Because he'll go, this is what Steve Moore's going to do. And Steve Moore advises Donald Trump on economic policy, like, direct line connection. So he's going to be the type of guy who you would expect to speak at this really high level, because he's at the highest level of this conversation. But I will ask him, like, can you explain to us what a tariff is? He's going to say, well, Annie, you know, I'm a free trade guy. He's going to say that. And I'm going to ask him the basic super, you know, elementary questions, because that's the only way we can be more educated on what is actually happening. We have societally relied so much on our favorite personalities in the media to, like, you know, like in the cartoons where the top half of your head just opens up on a hinge and then they put the information in and then it closes. So then you just go on your merry way. I feel like, good grief, it's impossible for me to be objective on this issue, but I feel like specifically liberals in this country, that's what they've been doing for so long. That it has just been, you know who your enemy is, and then everything else is just an avenue that day to hate him again today, over and over and over.
Which is why this is such an interesting time, because you see things like, you know, different media outlets saying maybe we need, you know, personalities say maybe we need to reassess this. Maybe this is an actual moment where people are having that discussion behind enemy lines and saying, you know, we just lost. Maybe a dialogue is good.
Well, thank you for that beautiful segue, Ryan Wiggins. Mika and Joe, and every time I see Mika, this is just my female response to seeing Mika. Every time I see her, she looks like she just put on a lot of makeup, so you can't tell she was crying.
Okay. I would never have picked that up.
Women specifically will know what I'm saying, but she just kind of has the look like she was sad.
Yeah, well, I could see that.
And this is really no different, but Mika and Joe went on MSNBC, of course, Morning Joe, to announce that they went to Mar-a-Lago to sit down with Donald Trump and have a conversation.
Friday, we were given the opportunity to do just that. Joe and I went to Mar-a-Lago to meet personally with President-elect Trump. It was the first time we have seen him in 7 years.
Now, we talked about a lot of issues, including abortion, mass deportation, threats of political retribution against political opponents and media outlets. We talked about that a good bit. And it's going to come as no surprise to anybody who watches this show.
I don't like his laugh there. When I was watching this the first time, it's such a fake laugh. It's an insert of levity to the situation because he knows that the people who are listening to him at that point are like, "You did what?" He's like, "We disagreed on everything." Yeah, but you're at Mar-a-Lago. You went to meet you went and broke bread or whatever it is with the mortal enemy that you've been telling us that the country would completely dissipate under his leadership, and now you're hanging out with him. He's like, "We disagree on abortion." And Mika still looks like she's covered up or crying.
Instead, over the past year or over the past decade, that we didn't see eye to eye on a lot of issues, and we told him so.
What we did agree on was to restart communications. My father often spoke with world leaders with whom he and the United States profoundly disagreed. That's a task shared by reporters and commentators alike. We had not spoken to President Trump since March of 2020, other than a personal call Joe made to Trump on the morning after the attempt on his life in Butler, Pennsylvania. In this meeting, President Trump was tearful, he was upbeat, he seemed interested in finding common ground with Democrats on some of the most divisive issues. And for those asking why we would go speak to the president-elect during such fraught times, especially between us, I guess I would ask back, why wouldn't we? 5 years of political warfare has deeply divided Washington and the country. We have been as clear as we know how in expressing our deep concerns about President Trump's actions and words in the coarsening of public debate. But for nearly 80 million Americans, election denialism, public trials, and January 6th were not as important as the issues that moved them to send Donald Trump back to the White House with their vote. Joe and I realize it's time to do something different. And that starts with not only talking about Donald Trump, but also talking with him.
Can you? What if you'd have done that before the election? What if you would have been willing to open up a dialogue with him before the election? You have not had a conversation with this man since 2020, and you were telling everybody that he was such a threat to democracy, that he was Nazi-esque, that he was Hitler-esque. You've been doing that for 4 years. You had an entire election cycle, and you never spoke to him. And after he wins, you're like, "I guess we should chat." Now? This is a hostage situation. Mm-hmm. MSNBC has to have said to them, "You can't continue doing what you're doing and stay on the air. You have to figure out how to make a sea change here."
It's also amazing to hear these people say, "You know what? It's probably good to meet with your adversary." First of all, I can't believe that they're saying, "Well, he's our adversary," basically, is what they're openly saying. But also Mika say, "My dad, you know, he was good at this. He would talk to foreign leaders and people that he disagreed with." Do you remember in 2018 when Trump met with Kim Jong-un? I just pulled up headlines. They did nothing but mock him for meeting with foreign leaders that they disagreed with. And now they
with leaders they disagree with?
Yeah, exactly.
This is the biggest... This is just the biggest confirmation post-election that I've had so far that not only did Donald Trump win the election, he's won the culture.
It's a good point.
The YouTube live chat poll for today is simple. Is Donald Trump cool? Yes or no? If you paid any attention to football this weekend, I saw it in the other lamer version of football, soccer. I don't know who it was. Sorry, you're a soccer guy. I forgot.
No, it's okay. Football Europeo. That's what we call that one.
It was an English team. That was like across the world.
Doing the Trump dance.
Oh, I missed this.
Yes, you get the Trump dance going and it's worldwide. Is Donald Trump cool? If Mika and Joe have made it this far, purely fueled on TDS that is insatiable by a portion of the electorate, not only... is the electorate for what they're offering large enough in the Electoral College? They are legitimately in the minority now, as are their ratings, and their future cannot look too terribly bright. under the circumstances of continuing to follow the status quo. This is a very interesting, this is, a, to me, a huge indication that we culturally have determined on the whole that Donald Trump isn't who they said he was. That doesn't mean that everybody agrees on who he actually is. But people have rallied around Donald Trump, not just electorally, because when you're doing this at a English soccer game, they're probably getting their votes in Pennsylvania. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
When
takes a few extra days.
It does. You know, dates and stuff. Time change. Time zones.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
International date line.
Yes. I mean, what even?
Prime meridian.
What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Longitude.
Right. Latitude, too.
Yeah.
It takes a few days. Or weeks.
Whatever it needs. Find me the votes, Ryan Wiggins. Just find me the votes.
Ooh, careful.
No, I think this is how you do it.
Oh, okay.
Now. This is how you do it now.
Oh, gotcha.
I think that Mika and Joe do not, you would really think that after an election, this is where this type of pushback, this TDS pushback, they get to be the destination for people who oppose this administration. There is something to that. When Barack Obama won in 2008, and I was at the station in February of 2009. So I started like a week or two after Barack Obama was inaugurated. There was kind of a surge of people who came to 97.1 because it was a place to be, because you were in opposition politically to what the administration was, and you wanted to be among like-minded people, and you knew you could do that. This is an opportunity for people on MSNBC to go, hey, this is our moment. Fox News has been doing their Fox News thing this whole time. They're going to have their viewership, but now our people need a place to go. If Mika and Joe are on their morning show and they're talking about meeting with Donald Trump, something bigger than just a political defeat has happened here. It may last 48 hours. If Donald Trump is able to use this momentum for good, which I think he absolutely can, and I don't really see any indication at this point that he's going to step on his own opportunities here, I think it's huge, because I would much rather win the culture than a political campaign. YouTube live chat poll, is Donald Trump cool? Yes or no? Would love to know why you think what you think on this. So go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel, leave a vote in the poll right there, and tell us why you voted the way you did. Josh said, 100. Trump has more street cred than most rappers and more felonies. Thank you, Josh. Thank you. Let's take, go to break.
That was a good out.
Yeah, I know. Josh said, Trump has more street cred than most rappers and more felonies. We disagree on everything, including abortion, Joe said. We'll be right back.
Look, I hope that the Ethics Committee will stick by our tradition and protocol for the reasons I just articulated. I think this would take us down a path there where I don't know how we'd return if the House Ethics Committee and its resources, which are significant, substantial, could be used to investigate people who are not in the House, then where would that end? I mean, people could weaponize that function of government as well. The reason that Matt Gaetz is such an exciting pick to so many people is because he will go in and reform the Department of Justice. It desperately needs it. Look, he and I sat on the Judiciary Committee together for almost 7 years before I became Speaker of the House, and we heard the evidence. We saw the evidence of lawfare. We saw how the Department of Justice had been used for political purposes, how they targeted Catholics in some examples, and parents at school boards, and pro-life Americans. This is not what our system of justice was built to do, and Matt Gaetz will go in there and shake it up. And I think most of the American people understand that's an important function.
That's Speaker Johnson talking about Matt Gaetz's appointment to the Attorney General position. And as you know, Matt Gaetz, upon his appointment, resigned from the House of Representatives that day, and he had an ethics report out there. This is all a part of a bigger conversation surrounding specifically the House of Representatives with these appointments. The majority for the Republicans, are they going to be able to shore this up to make sure that they continue to solidify that majority? We are joined now by our friend Ryan Schmelzbach with us. CBS, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent, is with us. Ryan, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, always great to be on, Annie. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you. Tell me about the feeling right now. Of course, Donald Trump wins the election. It's going back to the Republican side. The Senate, strongly Republican, so no more 50-50 split there. But the House of Representatives, there's a lot going on.
There certainly is. And, you know, I think there's this level of fear in the House of Representatives right now that they might just lose their majority if President-elect Trump keeps taking some of their members and putting them in their cabinet. Now we're talking about three members that have been selected over the last couple of days. Now, the big thing is going to be is kind of getting over the shock value of Matt Gaetz being selected as the attorney general. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talk about what this means for the House Ethics Committee report that you just brought up with Speaker Johnson's soundbite right there. And, you know, we learned actually just a couple of hours ago that the House Ethics Committee is expected to meet on Wednesday and discuss the status of that report. So there's a lot of moving parts right here. And of course, this has created a bigger legal battle of whether or not that report can be released and whether the Senate can get their hands on it or at least get information from it.
Well, Ryan Schmelz with us right now. Do you feel like, is Mike Johnson feel comfortable about these appointments? Elise Stefanik, Congressman Waltz there in Florida, I believe, and Matt Gaetz, of course. Does he feel like we can replace these with Republicans? He's not worried about it?
Just about all of them are from safe districts. I don't think there's a too much of a level of worry. Right now, he's been pushing to get Governor Ron DeSantis to pretty much start the special election process in Matt Gaetz's district as soon as possible, with the hope that they could get that seat filled by early January before the new Congress takes over. Now, I think that there is a little bit of wishful thinking there. But at the same time, I think they want to get these seats filled as soon as possible. And of course, they have to deal with Kathy Hochul in New York. And there's no telling when she's ultimately going to do this. And, you know, she's got some legal binding, you know, commitment she has to do when it comes to filling Elise Stefanik's seat. But she could, you know, run up the clock on that and wait till the last minute. And then Republicans are stuck with a couple of weeks of, you know, an even slimmer majority than they already did have going into this Congress.
We're speaking with Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent Ryan Schmelz. I'm looking right now at the New York Times report here. 12 of 25 Senate confirmation appointments that have been made so far. Matt Gaetz, who has he's resigned his position in the House, so that seat is vacated right now. But Elise Stefanik, she would also need to be confirmed by the Senate, or what we keep hearing, especially on X, there's a lot of posts about it. We don't need the Senate to confirm anyone. We'll just do recess appointments. Can you, in an elementary way, break down for us what it means to get recess appointments, and then also the likelihood that you would potentially see a Secretary of State or an Attorney General be approved through this recess appointment maneuver?
Right. So the idea of a recess appointment is essentially if the House and the Senate are both in recess for 10 days, I believe is the number, then the President of the United States can appoint a cabinet secretary within that time without getting Senate confirmation. Now, of course, the idea of this is to be there for emergency situations. You know, let's say the House and the Senate are on their Christmas recess, so they're on their October recess, which lasts over a month, you know, and then the defense secretary dies while we're at war. Well, then the idea was for a recess appointment to be there so that they can fill that position and America doesn't have a position that's, you know, not being served out in the case of a situation like that. So, of course, I think President-elect Trump is trying to utilize this recess appointment as a way to help some of his members that may face a contentious confirmation process, especially if they're not able to get the necessary 50 to 51 senators they need to get that confirmation. And I think that these rumblings really started with Matt Gaetz. A lot of the early picks, whether it was Lee Zeldin for the EPA, Elise Stefanik for UN Secretary, or UN Ambassador, I should say, or even Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, not a lot of pushback on that. Certainly, there were Democrats who don't like those people, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be facing a challenge of getting all 53 incoming senators from the GOP to vote for them. But then the Matt Gaetz pick came up and the Pete Hegseth pick came up. And next thing you know, you can't guarantee that every Republican is going to be united around these specific individuals.
Ryan, this is also Ryan. We are in St. Louis. You're in Washington. You know, you got your ear to the ground. I keep hearing that RFK Jr. is maybe going to have a tough time getting through the confirmation process. That surprises me. Is that just talk, or are you hearing the same thing?
Yeah, there's a couple of things to point out there. So number one, you got to look at the committee RFK Jr. has to go through. So he would go through the HELP committee. HELP committee is going to be chaired by Senator Bill Cassidy next year. And if they keep the current senators who are on the committee for the next Congress, then you're also going to have Lisa Murkowski and you're going to have Susan Collins on the committee. So that's three Republicans who supported convicting President-elect Trump during the second impeachment trial. So there is a question of even if Robert F. Kennedy could even get out of committee. And I think, too, there's going to be this question of, well, we do have to keep in mind that he has been a Democrat for pretty much the entirety of his life up until this year. So are past liberal statements that he made going to be a problem for Republicans when they start digging into his record more and looking at who he is? And of course, you know, I think we don't truly know what his specific plans are for making America healthier. And could there be some ideas that he has that doesn't exactly fit with the Republican Party's agenda, which is less regulation, more free market, smaller government? Well, some of those ideas that he has might include more regulation, more government, and maybe that won't sit well with Republicans. So I think that, yes, his confirmation is still up in the air as of right now.
We're speaking with Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent Ryan Schmelz. Last question before we let you go, Ryan, that really brings me to this kind of conclusion of this, all of these appointments coming in. Some people love Marco Rubio and can't believe Matt Gaetz. Some people love Matt Gaetz and can't believe Marco Rubio would find these themselves in these positions. How much weight does it's Donald Trump's mandate, the majority of the country voted for him. If you kind of have a little bit of head scratching going on about any of these, if it's who Donald Trump wants, we have to trust Donald Trump with these appointments. How much of that sentiment exists when it gets into the halls of Congress?
It definitely does play into it. And you're seeing Speaker Johnson make that argument that this is the president's mandate. The American people elected us to put in the people that President-elect Trump feels are the best people for this job. But I've even heard people in MAGA world, I think one that stands out would be Max Miller, congressman from Ohio. He primaried one of the Republicans who voted to impeach Trump the second time around. He worked in the Trump administration. This is somebody who considers himself a Trump loyalist and a part of the MAGA movement. And he has serious issues with Matt Gaetz. So I think there are some members, even within the MAGA movement, who see this as an opportunity to say, no, maybe Matt Gaetz does not represent us. And it's our opportunity to get him away from that position. Now, of course, they're going to let it play out because they are members of the House. But I think there are those in the Senate who just really want to see what this ethics report has to say. They want to look into his background. And I think if there's any pick where a recess appointment would probably rub people the wrong way, it would probably be the Gaetz pick, just because there are so many question marks about his background that senators really feel they need to have answers with before they're comfortable enough to support him.
Yeah, a recess appointment for an attorney general in this situation is a little bit different than the example you gave earlier, which is the defense secretary dies when we're at war in October. It's just a little bit different of a purpose for the intended recess appointment. Mm-hmm. Ryan, there's going to be so much more to cover as these days go on. We hope you'll come back with us and continue these conversations because we love the inside look.
Absolutely. Anytime, Annie. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate you. Ryan Schmelz, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent. Go follow him on X at Ryan Schmelz Fox and tell him hi from the Annie Fry Show. He's great. When I was in Washington, D.C. with my son's eighth grade class trip, he found out, or I don't know, I think I tweeted or something that I was in D.C., maybe a picture of like a monument or something. And he messaged me. He's like, are you in D.C.? I was like, I am. And he came and met me. And
that's cool.
He was wonderful and very, very well-versed and knowledgeable.
Anytime I hear him on Big Fox, which I do regularly, I always think of that.
Yeah. He's a good guy. And I'm glad that he was able to give us some time today. All right. Quick break. Wiggins America, what we missed over the weekend when we come back.
Monday roundup.
All right. Stick around. More Annie Fry Show right around the corner. The YouTube live chat poll for today: is Donald Trump cool? Two-Bit says, if cool means someone that gets it, he is very cool. Thank you, Two-Bit, for the comment. Give us your thoughts, your vote on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, and keep it right here because Wiggins America is next.
Monday Roundup. Yeehaw! This here's the wildest round.
Let's get this one out of the way first. How many have you ever done yoga?
Yeah.
Not regularly, but you've done it.
I've done it at home for stretching purposes when I was pregnant.
Okay. Okay.
But I don't think it's like yoga.
It's not like you were in classes.
No, yeah. I was in pain and trying anything.
Okay. So
whenever I was doing cardiac rehab, some of the cardiac rehab nurses were like, let's do yoga. And I was like, okay.
Is that how they talk?
Kinda.
It seems like there's a wide variety of ways you can do yoga. Because some people just do it for the stretching. Some people make it into kind of like pseudo-religious. But apparently there's all these different. There's hot yoga.
Yeah. Which I'd be more interested in that than anything.
Me too. That's the only one I would do.
Everything you do is
I just do regular yoga, and people are like, that is hot yoga.
That's hot yoga.
candlelight yoga and goat yoga.
Candlelight yoga would be nice.
Apparently there's a new one, and this is what's making the news this weekend. It is snake yoga.
Barf.
Snake yoga is a spine-chilling yet fulfilling experience that takes place in a small private setting with a limit of 4 attendees in the downstairs non-heated part of this California studio, of course. There, ball pythons will be mindfully incorporated into a gentle 60-minute yoga class.
None of those words are in the same sentence correctly.
Well, if it's gentle. I mean, if you tell the snakes ahead of time, look, this is intended to be gentle. Don't squeeze anybody to death. Then I'm sure it'd be okay.
Just a total liberal thing to do. Oh,
gosh. Man, that came in hot today.
I like it. Yeah.
Hot yoga. Hot Monday roundup. Next one. Man, this one, I love. When I saw this story making the rounds, I'm like, this is amazing. I love this story. So the Paul Skeens baseball card. This is a Topps trading card.
Oh, yeah.
You're familiar.
I know the story.
It's amazing. Topps has released one trading card of Pittsburgh Pirates rookie pitcher Paul Skeens. It is signed. Now, there's other cards of his, but there's one in particular that is supposed to be like the holy grail of baseball cards this year.
It's the first issued one, correct?
Yes. Yeah. But it's the only one. And he signed it, and it's in a pack somewhere in America like a golden ticket from Wonka. And if you get that card, you have a chance to the Pirates want this card. So it's not even a Pirates thing. The Pirates themselves, though, say, we want that card so
bad. Do the Pirates want it, or does Skeens want it, or does his girlfriend want it?
It says that the PNC Park wants to display it.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming this is the Pirates because...
Beautiful baseball field.
They are offering seats behind home plate at PNC Park for the next 30 years.
Yeah, it's a punishment.
And exclusive meet and greets with Skeens and two autographed Skeens jerseys and a chance to host a softball game at the ballpark with all your friends and
now
a bunch
that
of...
that is a reason to do it.
Pirates alumni, which sounds kind of fun. But they're doing all this for the one baseball card from Topps. So there are whole cottage industries popping up around this thing, making offers to whoever pulls that card because it's going to be so valuable. I mean, they're you know, putting together all of the value of the seats behind home plate for 30 years and all this stuff. There's a local baseball card company that says we'll give you $250,000 if you pull it right away. And they're thinking that the bidding will go up for whoever wants to get this thing to sell it. Whoever buys it will then resell it to the Pirates for all of this loot. I mean, that's a really neat story, and it's one that at some point in the next couple weeks, most likely, somebody's going to actually pull that card, and we're going to revisit that story and find out what they're going to do with it, because that'll be fun to watch. All right, 73% of America's food supply is made up of ultra-processed foods, says one new study, like chips, candy bars, and sodas. Nobody thought it could actually be that high, but according to a study from Northeastern University's Network Science Institute, 73% of the U.S.'s food supply is ultra-processed.
This is my favorite thing about the Trump administration that I didn't see coming.
Me too.
Is the potential to make America healthy again. Because obviously, there's something going on in this country that is not the case everywhere else.
Yeah. The one, I said this before the election, that if I were not involved in politics at all, and I heard RFK Jr. come out and say, look, here's what I want to do to bread. There's this drying agent that's been out there since 1992 or whatever, and this video made the rounds. We want to get rid of that drying agent because it causes all kinds of problems. Well, I think that when I've talked about having a gluten allergy, it may be that thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know because I've never like been tested for these things, but I know that when I eat a lot of bread or pizza, things with gluten in them, I associate with gluten, I get achy. And I'm hoping that if they're actually tying that stuff to this drying agent and they eliminate that, man, God save America if I can just eat bread again.
Real bread.
That's what I said before the election. If I wasn't involved in politics at all and somebody just told me, look, if you vote for Trump,
make bread great again,
you might be eating bread and pizza regularly again, I might have done it.
What do you think about that photo that was circling X this weekend that had Trump, Don Jr., Elon,
yeah,
and RFK Jr. sitting around eating McDonald's?
And Mike Johnson.
No, he was in the back.
He was just standing in the back.
He didn't get invited
though
to the table. Yeah. And if you want to see a white guy do the whitest guy things in the world, watch Mike Johnson walk into the UFC fight behind Donald Trump.
He looks like...
He was like, yeah, this is the man up here. Is... But he's too small, so you couldn't really see him. He reminded me... I like Mike Johnson. I have no problem with Mike Johnson. But he reminded me of Seth Green.
It, like the popular kids were coming into school in the big shot where there's fog and like
he
walking through.
Is the oldest in the group and had the car.
And snuck in.
He was the
shot
ride.
Somehow it was pretty funny.
And like I said, I love Mike Johnson.
Yeah.
I actually prefer him to be businessy and nerdy and like, you know, straighten that tie upright. Like, I want the Speaker of the House to look out of place at a UFC fight. And the good news is that he did.
He did.
But it is so, like, I was going, oh. Because Trump has this little strut, and yeah, he's got this head nod, and Dana White's walking in like, these are my people. And he's happy to be there. And Kid Rock has got on the biggest fur coat you've ever mm-hmm. seen. He's total rock star by definition. So he belongs there. And, you know, Trump is in his glory. Elon Musk is doing weird Elon Musk things, which mm-hmm. is what he's supposed to be doing.
Richest man in the world can get away with it.
And Mike Johnson's just like the Speaker of the House. He's still
hi
the Speaker
hey
of the House.
Guys.
Yeah. Now, I take back the Seth Green thing. Rick Moranis.
That's much yeah, better.
Great. Rick Moranis.
That's much better.
Rick Moranis in the crew.
Is that all weekend, if you were on the socials, you got peppered with those pictures because he must have just done a few events
yeah.
with Trump and the team, and every picture that had Mike Johnson in it, he was always like that.
Rick Moranis.
He was in the background like, oh, hey, me too.
Honey, I shrunk the budget. When you look at the McDonald's airplane picture, though, RFK Jr. does look like a hostage.
Yeah, he does. He's
like holding
he's eating
the
McDonald's.
There's no bite out of it.
No.
It's I don't know that it was staged, but like there's McDonald's everywhere. Don Jr. tweeted out, "Make America Healthy Again starts tomorrow." And RFK Jr. is like holding he looks like he's holding this Big Mac like it was a roadkill.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know what you want me to do with it. And then they're like, click, picture. Okay.
And he looks like they surprised him with it, and he's going, oh, no, this is going to come back to haunt me for sure. That he looks uncomfortable in that picture. Last one. So, of course, there's been some big boxing matches. I hesitate to report on the Jake Paul and Tyson thing because everybody's already talking about it. But there was a big UFC match. Of course, Trump was at that this weekend. Because of that, a story that circulated a little bit before is kind of making the rounds again. And I didn't see this last time through, so I'm reporting on it now. This was back in September. There was a big UFC match back then. Don't ask me to tell you who it was. But this
I won't.
Thank you, because I wouldn't know the names anyway. I don't even know the names of the recent one. There's a trading app that has gone viral because they dressed a woman up as Nancy Pelosi and had her sit at this UFC match. Now, I think they may have paid extra for a little bit extra screen time or something like that. But she looked a lot like Nancy Pelosi. Well, the reason they did it is because this app is the Los Angeles-based Autopilot. The whole point of it is that it tracks the stock buying of U.S. Congress.
Yeah.
And
what's the app?
It's called Autopilot.
Autopilot.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can track what they're doing and buy what they're buying, and it is causing a lot of waves to be made.
Well, you can set it up to auto buy.
Uh-huh.
It's set it and forget it.
A lot of people are suggesting that Nancy Pelosi is the biggest loser in this election. I don't know that she really has anything to stand on at this point. Where has she won?
You know, you could make an argument that it was Barack Obama, though, because he...
No, because he got out. I mean, he's out. She's still in. Barack Obama can say, I did everything I can. Nancy Pelosi, she's filed to run again in San Francisco. She's 84 years old. She was born in 1940. She's been around the block.
Yeah.
Many, many times. And she's still in there fighting. And whatever she's fighting for, I don't think this is it.
She could return to power in 2 years, though.
Maybe she'll run for president.
Okay.
We're going to try to connect with Steve Moore. And Mark Cox is going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour to talk about his ATF raffle. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yep.
We haven't talked to him in a long time. So, Mark, on with us in the next hour. Don't go away.